21. The Association. Modo wheezed his way down the driveway to Mr. Socrates' mansion, past a row of silver-plated lamps embellished with dolphins. Even at night, it was obvious why it was called Tower House. The mansion's four-story turret loomed over the estate. With each step, Modo clutched his chest harder. His broken rib was on fire. He staggered, latched onto one of the lampposts, and rested against it. He wiped his forehead and discovered clumps of hair stuck in his sweat. Bumps were appearing on his face, but he had no way to hide them. He hoped he wouldn't frighten Mr. Socrates' servants. He pulled up his scarf and staggered to the stone wall surrounding the house. Lights were on, even at this late hour. He pushed the iron gate open. "Halt!" a voice commanded. Two large men in greatcoats ran at him out of the darkness, one pointing a pistol. They stopped a good 5 yards back, unsure of what or whom they were dealing with. Modo kept his face turned from the lamplight.
"What's your business?"
the one with the pistol asked.
"To see Mr. Socrates. I'm in his employ."
"Oh?"
The pistol remained.
"And we're supposed to take your word for that?"
"It's the truth,"
Modo coughed.
"We weren't told to expect guests,"
the other man said, walking up to him.
"Let's get a good look at you."
He grabbed Modo's shoulder, yanking him into the light. They were hardened men with scarred faces, but they both recoiled in disgust.
"My God,"
gasped the one holding Modo's shoulder.
"What hit you?"
"Nothing." Modo was tempted to break the man's nose.
"Nothing. Release him."
Modo recognized the voice, and soon Tharpa was striding down the path.
"Return to your posts."
"We don't take orders from you, Waller."
Tharpa stepped up, broke the man's grip on Modo with a subtle flick of his wrist. The man groaned and pulled back his arm as though stung.
"Next time, listen to the Waller,"
Tharpa said to the men, as he guided Modo toward Tower House.
"Thank you," Modo whispered. "They see the color of my face and they make judgments. We are not so different, you and I."
Modo managed a little grin. Tharpa patted his shoulder.
"You do not look your best, young Saab. I'm very tired." "Well, you have one more task tonight, I'm sorry to say."
Tharpa led him into the house and closed the door. He brought a mask out from under a scarf on the hat shelf.
"You will want to wear this."
Modo took the mask and put it on. With a firm hand on Modo's back, Tharpa brought him into the dining room, whispering,
"All the Sahibs are here tonight."
Mr. Socrates was leaning over a map on the long teak table. Down either side of it sat five well-turned-out older men, buttons gleaming, cravats perfectly pressed. At the far end was a dark-haired woman in an emerald-green dress. Smoke stung Modo's eyes, and he stifled a cough. Three of the men cupped pipes, while the woman's spidery fingers held a long, retractable cigarette holder. The table was set with wine goblets, grapes, dinner rolls, and sweet biscuits, and littered with papers and maps. The gentlemen's top hats sat along a shelf behind them. Mr. Socrates looked up, his face drawn with exhaustion.
"Ah, my agent has returned. Step up. My associates would like to hear what you've discovered."
They were an intimidating lot. Intelligent eyes set into faces that revealed their years and, Modo guessed, worldly experience. Since Mr. Socrates had only referred to him as his agent, Modo realized his master didn't want them to know too much about him.
I went to the tower."
Modo scratched nervously at the side of his neck.
Who are these people, Mr. Socrates?"
"My interests are their interests. You may speak freely."
"Oh, I see."
Modo cleared his throat.
He felt naked under their penetrating gazes. "I entered the Tower of London, as you requested, sir, and interviewed Mr. Oscar Featherstone."
"What details did he provide?"
"He claims he didn't have control of himself when he committed the murder. He'd been given a tincture, and it divided his mind in two. Miss Hackendotter seems to have planted instructions in that second part of his self, if that makes any sense, sir."
"Sense?"
a gentleman echoed. He was hunched over,
and with his short grey hair and glasses, he reminded Modo of an unblinking owl. He was maybe 40 years old. His vest was brown, and with a shock, Modo noticed that his right hand was withered, only half the size of his left. Modo couldn't help staring at it, until a pang of shame hit him. This was, after all, how others always reacted to his own disfigurement, and he hated it.
"This suggests personality separation,"
the man continued.
"Did he say who created this tincture?"
Modo glanced at Mr. Socrates, who said, "Please answer Mr. Gibbons's query." "It was Dr. Cornelius Hyde."
"Hyde?"
Mr. Gibbons repeated. Modo felt his eyes drawn to the man's withered hand again. He looked away.
"But he disappeared over 10 years ago. He was quite mad."
"I met him once."
The woman took a long draw from her cigarette holder.
"Very adept at clockwork and obsessed with hybridity."
She let out a smoke ring that distracted Modo. He'd never seen such a thing.
"Did Mr. Featherstone mention any children?"
she asked.
No.
"Could Hyde really have created a tincture capable of altering the essence of a man's personality?"
Mr. Gibbons asked. Modo presumed this question wasn't for him.
"Perhaps,"
said another gentleman with dark hair. His well-trimmed, angular beard looked odd upon his wrinkled face. He was obviously English, but he wore dark blue oriental clothing, which Modo thought might be silk.
"Dire news that he's involved with the likes of Fur and Hackendottir. One wonders whom they serve, how organized they are."
"Well, sir, I can tell you this much," Modo said. "They're called the Clockwork Guild."
Everyone in the room was staring intensely at him now. He felt a little proud to have been able to surprise them with what was clearly important information. He was certain he saw a bit of a smile on Mr. Socrates' face.
"Kindly explain how you came to discover this," Mr. Socrates asked. "Featherstone said he had a rhyme stuck in his head. The symbols must fall, the Clockwork Guild sees all. And that symbol on the paper has a clock in it."
"Ah, that is indeed good information," Mr. Socrates said.
Modo took a deep breath, flushed with his success.
"So this Clockwork Guild is several moves ahead of us," the woman said. "I want to know how these feral children fit into the puzzle."
"They must be test subjects," Mr. Gibbons said.
He scratched his forehead with his good hand.
"The real threat at the moment is this gang of young gentlemen killers, and we don't know how many cells of these murderous youth exist. May I remind you that we still have no idea what has happened to young Prince Albert? He could be—"
"Let's conjecture after the interview with my agent is finished,"
Mr. Socrates interrupted. "What else did you learn?"
"I now know the names of all the members of the Young Londoners Exploratory Society."
Modo listed them. By the nods exchanged between his interrogators, he could tell that many of the names were familiar to them. Mr. Socrates set down his glass of wine.
"Well, better late than never. Any other details you feel should be passed along?"
"Only that Oscar Featherstone is innocent."
"Well, half of him is,"
the woman said. A few of the men chuckled. Modo wanted to rush to Oscar's defense, to press his point about innocence, but thought better of it.
"You're dismissed," Mr. Socrates said to Modo. "Thank you for your services."
Modo nodded and backed to the door, then plodded down the hall to the stairs. A gleeful thought penetrated his exhaustion. "I've now met the movers and shakers. They were likely titled lords and a lady, maybe even a duke or two. And all of them worked secretly to protect Britannia."
"I'll bring you food," Tharpa said from behind him.
"Please, don't trouble yourself."
"I choose to. Your dressings need changing also."
He disappeared into the kitchen. Modo used the banister to pull himself up the stairs to the third floor. Inside the wash closet, he took off his mask. His ugliness never failed to disconcert him, like an unexpected and unwelcome guest. He ran a wet cloth over his pockmarked forehead, enjoying the comfort of the cool water. He cleaned his hands, happy to find that the glass cuts were not too deep. Hearing a noise in the hall, he put his mask back on. When he opened the door, Mr. Gibbons was standing right outside.
"Ah, I beg your pardon, young sir. The other wash closet was in use."
"You are welcome to this one." Modo tried to step by him, but Mr. Gibbons didn't budge. He rubbed his withered hand. Modo tried not to stare at it again, but his eyes had a will of their own. He allowed himself a brief glance, enough to notice the man's dry, cracked skin.
"What is your name?"
Mr. Gibbons asked. "Modo." The moment he said it, Modo cursed himself. He wasn't certain if Mr. Socrates wanted the associates to know his name.
"Ah, I see. Mr. Socrates hasn't mentioned you before. Where do you hide your face?"
"To keep my identity secret."
"Ah, even from Mr. Socrates?"
"No."
"He always has the most interesting agents. To get into the Tower of London is no small feat. Congratulations."
"Thank you."
Modo edged away from Gibbons' overly large eyes. They didn't seem to even blink.
"Has he told you much about our association?"
"Very little. Nothing, really."
"He is such a secret monger, but it has served him well. I suppose you don't know that 2 more attacks have been made on senior politicians?"
"They have?"
Mr. Gibbons nodded.
"That's why we're meeting. Earlier this evening, George Glynn, the parliamentary secretary to the treasurer, was murdered by his son, Henry, with a sabre, no less."
It dawned on Modo that if he'd remembered all the names of the members of the Young Londoners Exploratory Society sooner, then this man would not have died. The thought sickened him.
"There was also a failed attack on William Yarrow."
Mr. Gibbons paused, as though expecting a reaction. Modo said nothing.
"He is the Postmaster General. Very odd target. Not usually considered a powerful position. Perhaps they were angry about slow mail delivery."
Gibbons chuckled, but even as he did so, he continued to stare, as though trying to look through Modo's mask.
"You have a curious name, Modo. Why did your parents choose it?"
"Mr. Socrates named me."
Surprise and delight flashed across Mr. Gibbons's face, and Modo swore silently. He shouldn't be letting information like that slip out.
"He named you? Ah, he has known you a long time then, Modo. In Latin, your name means formed. Did you know that?"
"Of course."
He had studied the meaning of the Latin word, and wondered why Mr. Socrates had chosen it as his name.
"Formed by what? By whom?"
Mr. Gibbons asked. Again, Modo chose to say nothing.
"Well, I sense you are anxious to retire, my friend. You've had a long night. It has been a pleasure to meet you."
He stepped aside and allowed Modo to pass.
"Thank you for sharing your discoveries with us."
In his room, Modo collapsed on the bed. Minutes later, he heard footsteps on the stairs and the door squeak open. Tharper entered with a plate of roast mutton and stewed carrots. Modo greedily took the plate, and while Tharper gently changed the dressing on his left arm, Modo wolfed the food down one-handed. When done, Modo lay back on his pillow again and closed his eyes. As Tharper shut the door behind him, he said something that Modo didn't understand. He assumed it was a Hindu word. He hoped that it meant sleep well.